Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, Halloween time festivities have been announced. The Oogie Boogie Bash dates are revealed. Grad night reunion information.
Drones could be coming to Disneyland spectaculars in the future. We finish our discussion with Nicolasa from Disneyana and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Peg and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of June 15th, 2022. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. Thank you to Lily B for becoming an official weekly tier on our Patreon. Our supporters get some pretty fun perks like DL Weekly swag, bonus content, and access to our Discord community. If you would like some more Disney magic in your day, head on over to dlweekly.net/support to join.
Well, it's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news. I was told that he is actually at 180 seconds this time.
Oh.
So take it away, Eric.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Johnson with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland in the D180, we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We begin our journey this week with some favorites returning to Walt Disney World. Starting June 29th, ride in style when minivans return to the resort. You get the pun, right? Mini, spelled M-I-N-N-I-E, as in mouse? You know her. Yeah, you got it. Anyway, minivans run through the Lyft app and have been missing for the last couple of years for reasons. These polka-dotted vans take the rideshare model and move it to a Disney level. Drivers are Disney cast members, so expect a high level of park knowledge and customer service. Minivans also include your favorite Disney music as you travel between parks and hotels. Each van is guaranteed to have two car seats, more than most Lyft and Uber vehicles. Up to six passengers can travel in comfort and speed between locations. And let me tell you from experience, the pickup and drop-off locations for minivans are way more convenient than any other rideshare location. The next time you're in the parks and not looking forward to another bus ride, give minivans a look in the Lyft app. The rides do cost more than an average Lyft trip, but believe me when I say they are worth it. Avoid excessive walking and waiting starting June 29th. Disney's Animal Kingdom will also see the return of shows in its Theater in the Wild. Finding Nemo, The Big Blue, and Beyond is a shorter version of the original Finding Nemo stage show written by Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez. You know, the songwriters responsible for Frozen. The new version contains most of the original songs and the incredible fish puppetry that made the show a must-see for so many families, but condensed to 25 minutes. If you want to see this live show, get in line early or reserve a showing with Genie Plus. Finding Nemo, The Big Blue, there's an ellipsis here, I swear. And Beyond returns on June 19th. If this has you dreaming about a trip to Walt Disney World, give your Concierge crew a call or send a message. 2023 vacations just opened up recently, so you have ample time to plan. Speaking of 2023, let's head eastward to Italy, where Adventures by Disney announced a new itinerary for Sicily. This new adventure starts in Palermo, where guests visit Italy's largest classic theater built in 1897. Learn about and make your own Sicilian ceramic art. Learn about Sicily's tradition of puppet theater. Visit Mount Etna, Europe's tallest volcano. Boat, snorkel, drink wine, visit ancient ruins. This new adventure looks like another classic, privately guided look into a fascinating culture. And that's 180 seconds. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you would like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, Concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and your family. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Well, thank you, Eric, for catching us up on all the other Disney news around the Disney universe.
Now let's get to the news.
Now, I took this story because I knew you'd want to talk all about it, so I figured I would just give the first part. This week, the Disney Parks blog posted some of the things that are coming back for Halloween time at Disneyland. This year, the season will run from September 2nd through October 31st. The standard seasonal decor, Halloween-themed attractions, and photo ops will all be back. Haunted Mansion Holiday and Halloween Screams Fireworks, Guardians of the Galaxy Monsters After Dark, and all the Cars Land's favorites will also return.
Got overly excited about this when this news dropped on Monday, because it just kind of felt, I mean, we knew it was coming, but it kind of felt like out of nowhere. I feel like we didn't have any sort of warning. It was just like, boom, and it was everything. Of course, we'll get to Oogie Boogie Bash as well, because that was announced at 2. But yes, very exciting. I think it was most exciting because it confirmed that we will for sure be overlapping Halloween time with D23, which is what we speculated. Yep. It was a little different this year with D23 being pushed back to September because we're used to D23 being in August. So I'm excited that we get to experience Halloween and all of its amazingness. It's just such a fun and festive time at the resort. I love all the decorations that they do. I love all of the extra things. I really like that Halloween Screams is now open for everyone to enjoy, since previously this had been just for the Halloween party when it was hosted in Disneyland. So it's really fun that there's a Halloween-themed fireworks show. It did look like that this will have fireworks on the weekends and just a projection show during the weekdays. Honestly, it's so much fun to watch either way. Of course, everything's better with the fireworks.
Yes.
But still very, very fun.
So, first of all, the Disney Parks blog, which we have linked in our show notes, has a picture of the Halloween Screams, and it reminded me that we saw this when we were there last Halloween, and it made me have fond memories of Halloween. And we'll get into this with the Boogie Boogie Bash, too, so I'm very excited. In addition to all the normal stuff, there's going to be the Plaza de Familia at California Adventure through November 2nd, which is going to celebrate the spirit of Dia de los Muertos with live entertainment, foods, crafts, etc.
So
there's
fun.
Also going to be Pluto's Pumpkin Pursuit in Downtown Disney. I know that you're a big fan of all
of
the pursuits.
I'm so excited because it starts the weekend of D23, so I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. So lots of cool stuff. Obviously, we'll talk more and more about this as we get closer to Halloween. I'm sure they're going to talk about more details and stuff, but how exciting.
Very exciting. Well, along with all the normal Halloween time festivities, the Oogie Boogie Bash returns on 23 select nights from September 6th through October 31st, this time with a September 10th date being for D23 members only. Magic Key holders will have an early access to a limited amount of tickets on June 28th, going on sale no earlier than 9 a.m. Pacific, and general sales will begin on June 30th. Visit the links in our show notes for all of the dates and all of the details and all of the fun.
So I have a question for you because I...
We haven't talked about this.
So there is the D23 fan club members can get this special only D23 members for Saturday, September. That's during D23, isn't it?
It is during D23. It is the Saturday of D23. And it is also one of the more expensive nights that you could be going.
But my question is this. Is this something that people should do with D23? Because I feel like D23 is so busy anyway.
I get the idea, but I don't think it's... I don't think execution-wise it's going to work out very well. If you're someone like Tag and myself that are doing the full weekend, so you're doing D23 Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you're extreme crazy like we are, and you're there before open and you're there all the way till close, I don't think I would have enough energy to do all of the wonderful things and amazing things the expo has and then also do Oogie Boogie Bash, because I have one speed. For those of you that have not experienced Disney with me, I kind of have one Disney speed, and that's like full throttle, full speed ahead. I want to see, I want to do everything, and especially when it's limited stuff like this. D23, we only get to do this every other year,
right?
And Oogie Boogie Bash is once a year for us if we are able to make it out there. So I want to do, see, taste, touch, smell, whatever, everything. So it would be way too much for me. Now, if you're somebody that's more casual and doesn't feel like you need to like go, and you're going to make it to Expo when you make it to Expo, and you're going to see what you can see at Expo, but you don't care if you're going to see, you know, like making sure you don't check off a bunch of panels isn't necessarily your thing. And same thing with Oogie Boogie Bash. If you just want to be there and enjoy it and you're not trying to do every single thing that you can do at Oogie Boogie, then I could see that being worthwhile. The one thing that might be a plus for that night is Oogie Boogie Bash, with it being an after-hours event, already has much, much lower crowds than daytime levels,
right?
Which is a huge plus. This, I feel like there's going to be, like, nobody there. Because mm-hmm. you're going to have a lot of people, like Tag and myself, that are going to be too focused on the expo and too tired from the expo. You've got a much smaller pool of people that are even allowed to take, you know, to get tickets for that night. So I just feel like if you decide this is your thing, you're probably going to be one of the few people there, which would make an extra spooky, magical experience for you.
Yeah, I just worry that, because we talked about this before, where D23 just takes so much effort during the day, and a lot of times D23 stuff doesn't wrap up till like 7. Yeah. Well, the party starts at 6 and goes to 11. Mm-hmm. So if you are at D23 till 7, and then you walk over there, maybe if you're quick, it's going to be 7:30. So then you're 7:30 to 11. That's not the full time. And I'll tell you, when we were there, you need like all the time to see all the tree trails to see all the stuff. So I was really excited by this because I liked the idea that it was just going to be D23 gold members. I figured it might be an easier day to get a ticket on and all this stuff.
Well, they haven't said specifically. They just say D23 members. We don't know if you need to be a gold member. They haven't specified that. So for now, I'm assuming that it's general and gold members have the chance to buy tickets for this special night. Now, the one thing that for me would have been a bonus and would have pulled me into buying a ticket for the D23 member exclusive night would be if it would have been at a reduced rate.
Yeah.
So if they would have, because right, it is $179, which is the same price as what the Halloween is. So that's like the one of the top tier night prices.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been, if it would have been like, I don't know, half that, 50, 60 bucks, 70 bucks, whatever, then it would have been more worthwhile. I just don't feel like I would get $179 worth of stuff done in that night. But if it would have been reduced, so we'll say, I'm just going to make up a number, $75.
Sure.
Then it would have been more justifiable, because you also, you and I talk about this later,
sure. But
if you're only going to be around that weekend, consider extending your trip, because Tuesday the 13th and Thursday the 15th are both Oogie Boogie Bash nights, and I want to say they're $129 party.
Oh, way cheaper.
Yeah. And
you get more hours.
And you're not going to have all day run around like a crazy Disney person at the expo. So to me, that's the way to go. I'd rather extend my trip and have a more enjoyable Oogie Boogie Bash. Oh, excuse me. Thursday's $139, but still, much better than the $179.
Well, there's Tuesday, which is $129.
Yep. Tuesday is $129. Thursday's $139. So to me, that's the route I would want to take,
mm-hmm.
Just because I go.
Well, so and I tell you, like,
and then, think about this. So not only did you expo all day Friday, all day Saturday, and then Oogie Boogie, you're bash off until 11, you then have to get up and go
parks
on Sunday
panel.
The parks panel is first thing Sunday, and that's one of the most exciting things for us about expo.
Yeah.
So,
and you have to be there early for that if you want to get seats and stuff, or get good seats.
Yeah,
it's just crazy. I like the idea too. Maybe if they would have done the Thursday night before the expo, that would have been a nice one, but no. Well, the Disney Parks blog has announced some new details about the Disneyland After Dark Grad Night reunion events coming up on June 23rd, 28th, and 30th. There will be plenty of locations where guests can dance the night away to all different decades of music. Photo ops will also be available, along with, of course, plenty of fun food and beverage options.
So, you know, I'll be honest, you can rewind back to whatever episode it was that we first were talking about this. This was not something on my radar, something that I wasn't very, wasn't for me. We'll just put it that way. The teasers make this sound a little bit more exciting for me. I don't know why. It's not necessarily the food. I think it's the entertainment and stuff, with the things to do during the night that's redeemed for me.
So when we were there, last month? Last month, they were really promoting trying to sell this. Yes. I feel like all the other After Dark things had sold out pretty quick. This seems to be
I've noticed problem. The same thing with other nights, that they'll be promoting them. And you and I being so deep into Disney news that we know stuff, like know way more than your average park goer knows. A lot of times they still promote things even though it's been sold out.
Oh.
So we'll have to double check. But for some reason, I thought that this was sold out.
Nope. In fact, all 3 days are still available.
Well, wait a minute. Since this is not something I really cared about, did these just go on sale?
No, this went on sale forever ago.
Okay.
These were on sale when we were there because they were like, buy your tickets.
Got it, you're right.
So I think that this, for whatever reason, this is just not striking a chord with people.
I mean, there's probably a lot of people like me that are just not... To me, this doesn't... I personally wouldn't do this. This doesn't excite me in the way that, like, Oogie Boogie Bash excites...
Sure.
Is exciting, or... Because think of Oogie Boogie... They kind of, like, partied themselves into a corner because Oogie Boogie Bash is amazing. There's so many things to do and see, and the park literally is transformed for that party.
Yes.
It's incredible. So
it's almost like Fantasmic, where you come in at night and it's totally different.
Right? Yeah. They've set themselves such a high bar when it comes to these after hour events. And I'm going to be honest, it might not be a very popular opinion, but I don't see the same value with the other After Dark events. And this one was like the least exciting to me of all the different after hour events that they have done. So if I were local, maybe it'd be, you know, it's more, maybe that'd be more something to do, something new, something fun. But for me being somebody that would have to be traveling, and so I'm not only getting a hotel, I'm also paying for air tickets and all that. It's just not worth it for me. And I feel like, again, with the price tag that they set for the amazingness that is the Oogie Boogie Bash,
sure,
having a similar price tag to these other events that I don't feel are as good, that's just not for me.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I don't know. I'm just sad because I feel like it could be something really cool, and it just hasn't. Yeah. And the thing is I want Disney to keep doing these after
100%
dark events. I'm just worried that if they have a couple of these that don't work out, they're going to stop trying new things. And I want them to keep trying new things, like the Star Wars night, the Villains night.
I don't think those are great. I think Star Wars night's here to stay. And in fact, I don't remember who I heard this from. May have been Ordinary Adventures, said something about how it would be really cool if Star Wars night was just all of May every year, so it's kind of like the spring's version of Boogie Bash.
Sure.
Because that's the other thing, too, is, again, Disney's a business. I feel like we have been talking about that a lot, but just think of flipping the park over for these party nights and how much extra stuff they have to have and effort and time and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes these parties are one night, two nights, maybe three nights in this case. So you just...
I feel like
they just
nights.
Can't, you know, but whereas Oogie Boogie being over, you know, 2 months, basically, it's worth it then. It's worth the investment. I mean, cripes, look at Villains Grove. They put in all of that extra special equipment just to have that experience.
I would pay $100 and something just to do Villains Grove. You know, it's weird. It's little things like that that really just get me going. Yeah. So, I don't know. I hope that they keep doing these After Dark event things. And, of course, what I really wish they would do, but they're not going to, but I really wish they would do, is I wish that they would do later party nights, because I would love to be in the park more at night.
Sure.
So if they would extend it, if they would allow regular park guests to let the park stay open later, like Star Wars, right? If you're going to do that through all of May, if they leave the park open until 10, which is only cutting an hour off like the normal park closing time, and then they extend the party to like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., like that would be amazing to me. And I know a lot of people get tired and they can't do it and all that stuff, but I'm just saying, I like it at night. I wish that they would do more things
that
did night.
That just sounds to me like a wonderful idea to come up with more themed cold brews to sell.
Well, there you go. I also wish that they would do another 24-hour day.
I feel like we're due for one of those.
Somebody said, I don't remember who it was, somebody I was talking to recently said, somebody told me they didn't think that those were happening anymore, and that made me very sad.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot to ask of the staff, too, so I see both sides.
I'm telling you right now, I would sleep all day, and I would go for the night.
You wouldn't do the whole... I would try and do the full 24 hours.
No.
I'd try and do the full 24 hours.
Teresa, I hate to tell you, but you and I aren't spring chickens anymore. I don't think that would work. Although, I guess with some cold brews.
Yeah, I would be... Yeah, cold brewed up, and I would try and do the full 24 hours. You might find me sleeping on a park bench somewhere, but I would try.
You know those, like, construction hats with the beers in them?
Yeah.
You would have two cold brews.
There you go. Disneyland Paris celebrated its 30th anniversary back in April, and when it came to a new nighttime spectacular, they used drones. What does this have to do with Disneyland? Well, Disneyland is exploring ways to use drones in future spectaculars, but is still very much in the blue sky or early planning stages. One of the challenges is the location of the park near neighborhoods and highways. Other massive drone shows take place in more rural areas like deserts.
So, there's one line in this Orange County Register article from the Disneyland person. Let me get her name really quick here. Wendy Ruth, who is the Disney Live Entertainment show director and writer, said this thing, and I couldn't let it go. We'll get back to the drones, but I could not let go of this line that she said, here at Disneyland, our guests don't like to see a lot of change. They want what they know. But when we can do something like a World of Color and surprise them and say, you didn't know that you wanted this, you're still seeing those characters you like. You're still hearing the music you love. We're just presenting it in a brand new way. I just feel like we do like to see change. You just have to be careful with it. Because I know that people freaked out about getting rid of the Tiki Room or getting rid of anytime it's come up, like Abe Lincoln. But I think we like new stuff.
I think I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking about things like... for example, I got very worried about them getting rid of Tarzan's treehouse, the stump entrance, and what that was going to do. We got nervous when it was time to repaint the castle and they announced, oh, we're going to be doing different colors. So anytime that they make small changes, think of poor Kim Irvine when it came to redoing and kind of plussing Small World.
Sure.
People were...
Lost their minds.
Going crazy. So I feel we just need to trust Disney more. I want things to stay the same, but I want them to slowly add new stuff. So, for example, like you were saying, they know people love the Main Street Electrical Parade.
Sure.
Not everybody, but it does have a very big following. Otherwise, you know, why would people be excited about it still 50 years later?
Yeah.
The fact that they changed out the one float and not the whole parade, like, people are okay with that. If they kind of just ease some people into it, then we're better. If they just said post-COVID, you know what? We know you love Fantasmic. However, we've got something better for you. We would have lost our minds.
Oh, probably.
The universe would have lost their minds. So it's just, I feel like it's they're walking on eggshells a little bit. So I can see her point.
But they're talking about drones in a nighttime spectacular.
Oh. They can do whatever they want.
My thought is this. I have never been upset that they've tried new fireworks shows. What makes me upset is when they take something like My Beloved Remember Dreams Come True, and they play it for a lot of years, which is fantastic, but then they might come out with something that just seems like cheap. Sure. Like, I just want something that's the same quality level.
Yeah.
And I think that people will be okay with that. I think adding drones, I think, is cool because...
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious that environmentally and neighbors' happiness and all of that good stuff is playing into less fireworks at Disneyland.
Well, and also just think of the cost.
Yes, but I'm just saying, like, but there's other things, too.
Yeah,
environmental, cost aside.
Mm-hmm.
Environmental, neighbors being upset, even though nobody lived near Disneyland. You know when you're moving near there, you're going to have fireworks. But I think that they've got to find something that can sort of give that fireworky feel without the fireworks. If there's a cool drone thing, I'd be okay with that.
The thing that would be neat, I'm no drone expert, but, you know, I would think with winds, you know, are drones better with winds? Because, right, we have to cancel fireworks.
No, that's true.
If the winds are a certain way, because, you know, even though we're in Disneyland, we are still in a desert, and you have to be really cautious about these things.
Yep.
Would drones be more wind resistant? Would they be able? Would the show still be able to go on if you had drones, or if you had a drones element that's still more exciting? I mean, don't get me wrong, projections have come a long way, I think, from when they first introduced them. That, quite honestly, half the time when it's a projections only show, I don't realize that I'm missing the fireworks because there's just so much going on with projections and lasers and lights and fun music and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Do I love the fireworks? Absolutely, I love the fireworks. But if they could do like a projection drone show on the weeknights and then do projection drone fireworks like for the weekends,
sure.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. The other thing too is you're talking about projection. One of the things that's nice, I think, I don't know this for sure, somebody will write in and tell us probably, or maybe somebody in the chat, is the when they don't do fireworks, especially like on the castle, does that mean that Fantasyland can stay open?
That's true.
Does that mean when Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Very Railway true. Opens, we don't have fireworks, that whole land Very can stay open? Because that closes now for fireworks.
Yep.
So I think that there's a lot that can be gained back by not having fireworks. But maybe it's a nostalgia thing for me. I just really like the fireworks. And I think Disney does them so much better than anybody else.
100%.
That if they stopped doing fireworks, I feel like it's a net loss.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for the drones whenever they show up.
Yeah. I think it's just a way to plus the nighttime. So, right, it's the evolution of nighttime fireworks show.
Yeah.
Because first it was fireworks and music, fireworks, music, laser lights, fireworks, music, laser lights, projections, you know, and so I think it's just another layer to kind of add to the show. And quite honestly, like we were saying, it takes a little bit of stress off of the fireworks because that's not your one main big focus now, because there's so many other fun, cool things going on.
Yeah, because like Mickey's Mixed Magic, when it's not pyrotechnic,
it's so fun.
They don't have to cancel shows because of wind.
Yeah, exactly.
It is nice that they have an alternate version without fireworks, so when they do cancel fireworks, they can still do the show.
Well, and you not flip a switch. It's obviously not that easy, but you know,
program B.
They can go to plan B very quick.
Well, this past Saturday, a favorite classic villain returned to Tomorrowland. Darth Vader is now meeting again in the Star Wars launch bay for a limited time, which also means the Star Wars launch bay is back open.
He's meeting in front of.
Oh, in front of?
Yes, he's meeting in. Launch bay is not open.
Oh, dang.
He's meeting in front of. This was interesting to me because it was one of those things that until they pointed it out, yeah, you're right. We haven't seen Darth Vader in Tomorrowland because, as you just mentioned, he used to live in Launch Bay, and we haven't. And Launch Bay has not reopened since the shutdown. So. Yeah. So anyway, so I think, well, it does say in Launch Bay. Maybe that's just in the outside part, though.
Yeah, this does look like outside.
Yeah. Because I remember we had Captain Phasma and Stormtroopers.
Yep.
But that was like Star Wars night.
We also had Kylo Ren at one point, I thought.
In Tomorrowland?
No.
He's in Galaxy's Edge.
Correct.
It feels like, for the most part, they're trying to keep the Star Wars characters in Galaxy's Edge, which makes sense to me. I know we have a timeline thing, but I feel like Disney's slowly moving away from the timeline since we do have new characters that aren't citizens of Batuu that are hanging out there. I'm looking at you, Boba Fett. So I thought this was kind of interesting. It was something that I didn't realize until they announced that he was back for a limited time.
So it looks like it's sort of technically inside. It looks like they have one of the doors open that you can go into the launch bay, and there's like a little meet and greet, but it's really still kind of outside.
Yeah.
And then you go. So you can't see Darth Vader from Tomorrowland. He's kind of in this hidden area. My other thought is probably air conditioning, because it's probably pretty hot in his
That's
outfit.
What I was thinking. You got to keep the Vader cool, because that's an awful...
You got to keep the Vader cool?
That's an awful lot of... That's an awful lot of black to be wearing in the California sun, so... I feel it. I understand. Well, not all is happily ever after at Snow White's Enchanted Wish at Disneyland. Most of the projections after the poison apple scene have not been working recently. This doesn't make the attraction unrideable, but it does lose a lot of the magic of the reimagined attraction. This makes me so sad. Mice Chat shared some photos of this, and actually I think a video too, and it makes me sad.
Yeah, so my question is... They're just literally they're projectors that run a loop. So what's going on?
I am not.
Can they not get the bulbs or?
I'm not sure, but
what's going on?
It's interesting to me because I feel like this isn't. It's not to the normal Disney standard, and I feel like, I mean, it's the summer season, so they need the extra capacity. So I think that's why they're kind of. It makes me sad that the attraction's only half going. Mm-hmm. That we're not 100%. So yeah, I just hopefully they can get this figured out soon, or maybe this is just a goof up thing over the weekend, and people just seem to catch it then, and it hasn't been going on for too long, and it won't be going on for too much longer.
Yeah, it's interesting how much the projections actually add to the attraction, because I think when we're in there, I don't really pay too close attention to it, but yeah. That's the downside with these things, right? Mm-hmm. When you got like more advanced things, when
technical
they break.
Technical difficulties.
Finally, there have been some progress happening at the entrance to Tomorrowland. However, these are not the changes that we had been promised when the old French fry rocks had been removed. No word on if this is a temporary change or if this is the new plan for the entrance.
I feel this looks temporary to me. I really feel like this is their way to... I don't want to say camouflage, but kind of, because right now it's just two big areas that are grass. But the area, like if you're entering Tomorrowland, the area to the left has construction walls because there's some sort of like control box that's above ground there that the French fry rocks used to hide. Well, since the rocks are down, they have these construction walls around it. I feel like right now this is temporary. And it's basically to kind of give it a little bit something more than just A, grass, and then B, grass with construction walls on the other side. This doesn't look how this looks to me doesn't. I don't know. I have temporary vibes. I have temporary feels, and I think the other part of it is I'm really hoping we get some great news about Tomorrowland during D23. But time will tell.
So here's my thought. They've got plans for Tomorrowland. The new plans are doing a little something different with this entrance, so why would they spend all this time and effort building this structure of what they had from 3 years ago when they're going to do a whole different thing? Mm-hmm. Because maybe they're going to move the Orbitron somewhere else or the Astro Orbiter somewhere else, and that control box and all that stuff won't need to be there, so why would they build a whole thing for it?
That could be.
We don't have any reason to believe this necessarily, but I firmly believe that they've been talking for a while now about Tomorrowland. I'm thinking that they're going to announce something at D23. Because what else are they going to announce at D23? Because all the stuff that they've talked about before has been done, right? Like, all the stuff at Disney World they've done. All the stuff at Disneyland they've done. Mickey Minnie's Runaway Railway.
Well,
let's talk about something else that might be coming to Tomorrowland that's not part of a D23 thing.
A new dance party is what's coming to Tomorrowland. And it's happening nightly. Throughout the summer, Stitch's Interplanetary Beach Party Blast, say that 10 times fast, features some of your favorite characters in spacesuits performing groovy dance moves. It runs from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. nightly.
I like the fact that there is something for kids, and this is totally for kids.
Oh, man, I need to confess.
Uh-oh.
I know this is, like, for kids. It looks very fun.
You want to go see this?
I love the fun little costumes they have everybody in. So, like, I think my favorite was Pluto's. Because, right, it's a planetary beach party. Pluto has an inner tube on that has, like, planets outside orbiting around it. They're just so fun and so cute. Like, I would be all about this. This looks like a good time.
Yeah. So, Kate, I don't mean that it's just for kids. I just feel like the target audience is kids. I feel like...
And kids at heart.
Yeah, and kids at heart. Like, I don't know. I'd probably watch this like anything.
Oh,
families. There you go. Families. So, not judging. I'm just saying, like, I told you one of these times we need to go watch the Disney Junior thing.
Heart.
Remember?
That one doesn't appeal to me as much just because I don't know those characters really.
Sure.
Well, at all. Now, this is Pluto and Goofy, and I think I saw Chip and Dale.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
All right.
Characters that we love.
Well, fans of Buzz Lightyear and the upcoming Lightyear movie, get excited. A new drink holder is coming to Disneyland based on the Space Ranger himself. The Lightyear Gauntlet is very similar to the Thanos Infinity Gauntlet and the Iron Man Gauntlet that was for sale previously. The gauntlet will be available soon. We don't have a specific date. This does look kind of cool.
Who knew gauntlets were going to become like the new popcorn bucket? Every time I see a gauntlet, they're popular. Don't get me wrong. Every time we go, I see people walking around with these things. But every time I look at them, I think, oh, that would be... That's a lot of effort, like, to be either carrying that around, getting it in and out of ride vehicles, putting it in your bag, you know, all that
stuff. Bob Gurr say that was something that should fit in his scooter that he was talking about?
Perhaps. It's not something that appeals to me, but I do think that it's fun. You know, it's got the little laser beam on it, and it lights up.
If I was a kid, this would totally be my jam. But I'm with you. I feel like it's just too bulky, especially because we have to fly. I feel like it'd be hard to take back in the luggage. But I'm glad that they're making and trying new things.
It does make me laugh every time I see someone walking around with one of the gauntlet versions, and they're like, they are using it the correct way and drinking out of it. It puts a smile on my face. Well, as we reported on previously, there is a new Paradise Pier Hotel guest entrance to Disney California Adventure. The new pathway and entrance is now open for guests to use. Unlike the entrance to DCA from the Grand Californian, this entrance is exclusive to guests of the hotel, and your room key is required.
So this is kind of neat. I like the fact that they did this kind of, cherry color wall?
It's redwoody looking.
I love it. It looks gorgeous. And... I don't know. I thought for a while the one from the Grand Californian and the DCA was like guests only, and they were really strict about that. And I feel like they've let that kind of go. Do you think this will do the same thing?
Well, see, the thing about the Grand Californian is they have a lot of stuff going on at the Grand Californian, and the Grand Californian is also kind of another way to get to downtown Disney. But yes, I'm with you. I thought that it was exclusive to hotel guests. I don't know if I ever heard or thought that you had to prove that you were a hotel guest. I think it was just encouraged that it was hotel guest use only. But I can see, I mean, we do it now. There's many times that we'll, and you've got restaurants right there too, that, you know, especially when you've got dining packages for shows that are happening inside of the park. I feel like they're kind of blurring the lines a little bit there. And so, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a hotel guest or not, because there's just, like I said, there's just a lot more going on there. Now, the Paradise Pier Hotel, maybe down the line that will change, but I don't know if a lot of guests are going to be going out of their way to go visit the Paradise Pier Hotel if they aren't actually staying.
I'm just thinking it is literally the closest way to get into any of the parks, where somebody could drop them off in that little cul-de-sac thing. They get out, they walk down the thing, they're in the park, as opposed to even the DCA or the Grand California one, where you got to go through a lot of the Grand California.
That might be the other reason. They're trying to limit traffic flow because it would...
That'd be kind of a pain.
Be a lot of, you know,
get people dropping their Ubers off and everything there.
That might be the reasoning behind it, is just to not have congestion.
I'm wondering if they'll theme it when they theme it to Pixar Pier too, or to Pixar.
Right now, it's just the pathway is really beautiful. It kind of reminds me of like the areas around the Grand Californian. You've got the lovely big like pine trees, and you know, it's just really nicely done.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's always amazing to me is how well Disney landscaping does these things. Because this is, you know, this entrance didn't exist before, but, like, the landscaping doesn't look, like, it looks mature and doesn't look like it's brand new. It just looks really, really nicely done.
Agreed. Yeah, I'm glad that the Paradise Pier folks are finally getting, you know, they got their pool back, they've got this entrance now, they're going to get a remodel soon.
Paradise Pier's getting some love.
Yeah. Last week, one of the performances of the Spider-Man Stuntronic show didn't go exactly as planned. From video posted on Instagram from a guest at the show, it appeared that the Stuntronic didn't release from the web line and came crashing down into the building where Spider-Man usually lands safely. The side of the building is designed to break away in case of this type of malfunction, and by one of the shows later in the day, it looked like nothing had happened.
This was incredible to me to watch, because you see the video of poor Spider-Man just going right in the side of the building, and your heart drops, your stomach sinks, because you're like, oh my gosh, that, like, all I thought was, how expensive was that animatronic? And all
the side of the building,
and like, I just was like, oh, you know, this is going to take forever for them to fix. And the fact that, oh no, we've planned for this. It's breakaway siding, and the stunttronic's fine, and he's performing later in the day. That was just amazing to me. I mean, of course, leave it to the Disney Imagineers to have figured out any possible problem and figure out the solution for any possible problem. But I don't know if I knew that the building had a breakaway wall. Like, I don't think I knew that any of these things were in place. So that was what was so amazing to me. It is a little jarring to see Spider-Man just go plop right into that building. But
that's true.
Man, yeah, that was the craziest part to me was that, oh no, it's fine, you know.
Well, think about this too.
Nothing happened.
How many times has he launched since opening and it's gone perfectly? And this is the first time that something that we know of has had a problem. It's kind of amazing that it's worked so well for so long, and then there's just the occasional thing like that. Now, if you ask any of the cast members in Avengers Campus, their answer to the stuff breaking away was the fact that they're used to the Hulk getting around causing problems.
I thought that was a fun and way to explain it.
Yeah. Man, that would have been weird. Like, what if you had a huge Spider-Man guest, little one, who would, like, what happened to Spider-Man? Like, do you think Spider-Man showed up on the other side and finished the show? Or did they end it?
I don't know.
There's so many questions now that I didn't even think about.
I feel like they probably, again, they had a plan for it not working. So I feel like there was some alternate way for them to close out the show that wouldn't have been as jarring as just, well, Spider-Man's now, like,
Spider-Man's, like, got a concussion, boys and girls.
We need to, I feel like they had a plan, is what I feel.
So Kate in our chat said, I think that I read that they did have him finish the show and that there was a special audio in place. That's cool. See, they think of everything.
Psst, Avast there. Here comes seeking questions and long-lost Disney information, eh? Sure, you come to the proper place, but keep a weather eye open, mates, and hold on tight with both hands, if you please. There be squalls ahead, and James and Vern waiting for them what don't answer correctly.
Welcome to Trivia Land on this 239th episode. How you feeling tonight? You ready for some good questions?
It's already been 39 episodes. It's our 200th. It just seems to go so fast.
Doesn't it, though?
I hope we're ready for your questions. I mean, we had a perfect week last week.
Oh, yeah, that's not happening tonight.
No, man. I guess we can't have it all.
This week, we are back to the listener-submitted questions, and I guess they thought that I was too nice to you last week because, ooh, they sent us some good ones.
Oh, no.
So let's get right to it. You ready?
Yes.
As we'll all ever be, I guess.
All right. Your first listener-submitted question tonight from listener Will R. Walt Disney wasn't the only one who had an apartment in Disneyland. Who was the other person, and where was the apartment located?
Oh my goodness. Would this have been like Roy? But I don't know where his apartment would have been.
I didn't think it was an apartment, but I'm going to say I think it was in Adventureland.
Who? Roy?
No, not Roy.
Was it the president of Disneyland?
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I'm learning something new tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I feel there's a tickle in my head that there was, I know there's, there were, I thought there were offices. I didn't realize it was an apartment. So I'm just going to say Adventureland.
Do you need more specific than Adventureland?
I'll take anything you give me.
Okay. I'm going to say Adventureland. I was thinking like above like the bazaar, like that building.
Yeah,
there.
That's the only building you really could have something. I'll agree with the Adventureland there because I think that sounds right. But for person, who was the first president?
I'm trying to think back on a conversation we had with a weekly chair a long, long time ago whose mother worked at Disneyland and she was the secretary for Adventureland. And he was talking about that space up there. But I don't remember who. I remembered his story about Walt calling and her not thinking it was truly Walt, and so I think she thought it was a was prank it? Caller and hung up, but I don't remember. No Googling.
No, I was trying to see if this was the person, if this was Disney World or Disneyland.
Oh.
I guess that is cheaty.
Yes, that is cheating.
Well, I'll say Dick Nunes for my person.
I don't
know. Who I think was the president, but I'm probably wrong. And I'm going with you with Adventureland.
I genuinely can't remember who the person was.
And are those your final answers?
Yes.
All right. Your second question tonight, submitted by listener Omar S. In the partner statue, Walt is wearing a tie. On that tie is a lapel pin. What is the symbol on the lapel pin, and what is its origin?
It's his railroad.
Yeah, ranch.
Ranch, yeah.
Ranch, three circles, because that's an actual...
Not Circle D Ranch.
No. Those are actual, like, Disney property ranches. It's a ranch, and it was, like, the ranch he owned, and I want to say it was, like, Palm Springs area.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it was called.
Yeah, Ranch, Palm Springs.
I failed. I got to turn in my Disneyland card. But yeah, it was Walt's Ranch that was out in Palm Springs, but I am blanking on the name. It's three letters, though, is mm-hmm. what the tie clip is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blanking.
Okay.
This is not a good week.
Nope. It's because we had it so easy last week.
So that's all you got? Palm Springs Ranch?
Yeah.
That's not the name.
Hey, maybe it'll give us half a point for at least knowing what it is.
Final answer?
Yep.
It's as good as it's going to get, yes.
Your third question, submitted by listener Chris Y. In Casa de la Tires, you can see a poster for the Radiator Springs Annual Carburetor County Classic Film Festival. What movies are being shown at the festival? There are 12 total.
Oh, are we supposed to name all 12?
I will give partial credit.
Oh my goodness.
These are always so good to all. I can only.
Wasn't there a Hocus Pocus?
No, you're thinking of the posters that they switch out. He's talking about inside of Luigi's Tires. There is. There's a list. It's in like a display case in the queue.
Mm.
I remember looking at it because they're very punny.
Yeah, well, of course they are.
My brain's mush tonight. I can't even like think of anything clever to try and like guess my way through it.
Usually you're good at this.
I know.
Man, we suck. You were right, Vern. They were not nice to us this week.
Listeners got my back.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got nothing, Vern.
You got I
just got the Halloween one that was Hocus Pocus and...
yeah, but that's not... That's I know, different.
But... I know, but... I know. That's all that's coming to mind.
I know.
You're not willing to think of any Disney movies and just change one word.
Stop being mean. I said my brain was mush.
I feel like any other week we'd be good, but I don't know. Something in the air this week.
Okay. So nothing is final answer?
Yep.
All right. Fourth and final regular round question, inspired by Donna S. I have acquired a list of 6 train routes that Disneyland has seen. Put them in order from longest to shortest. People Mover, Monorail, Viewliner, Casey Jr., Big Thunder, and the Disneyland Railroad.
Longest to shortest is what you want?
Longest to shortest.
I gotta say
the monorail is the longest, isn't it?
Probably the monorail.
The Viewliner was in Tomorrowland before the monorail was, so that's going to be a shorter one.
Yeah, I'm gonna say the train, Disneyland train.
Was it Big Thunder really long? Like, wasn't that like a whole thing? Yeah, so the train, we'll do Big Thunder. What else was there?
People Mover? Liner. Oh.
People Mover's up there. Put People Mover.
People Mover above the Big Thunder.
Yeah. So Monorail, Disneyland Railroad, People Mover, Big Thunder.
Then we'll say Viewliner and Casey Jr.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, final answer?
Yeah.
I mean, that's as good as we're getting tonight, yes.
And your bonus question from listener Lisa K. Who voices Jose in the Tiki Room?
Oh, it's Wally Bogue.
Yep, I'll concur.
And is that your final answer?
Yeah.
All right. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Stick around until after tonight's discussion, and we'll all find out together.
For our discussion topic this week, we conclude our interview with the Disney Anna president, Nicolasa. Enjoy. I have to ask, because I feel like in interviews that I've seen, this person... So, he is a Disney Anna fan club legend, is Rolly Crump. Did you get a chance to see him speak at all? Because... Yeah. Yeah. Every interview I've seen with him, he seems like I'm mesmerized by him.
Yeah, he was one of our legends, and he was interviewed. The person who you should interview is the man who was, we've had various people who was in charge of our legends. Mm. And the first person who was in charge was a man named Dennis Pineda. He was on the board for many years. He's an architect by trade. In fact, he not only is an architect by trade, but you know how Disney company, they don't make everything themselves. They contract things out. So when they were making California Adventure, the company he worked for at the time was in charge of doing, when you go down Hollywood Street and you go into the building where they have, you learn how to draw.
Animation Academy.
And the animation, and you have Crush. Mm-hmm. He designed that building.
Oh, wow.
And then when they were building Disney Seas, he designed the Spanish castle in Disney Sea.
Wow.
And he's also done stuff at Walt Disney World. In fact, before COVID, he was working on a couple projects. And I said, can you tell me what they are? And he said, no. So I was talking to him about a month ago. And I said, so are you back working at those projects at Walt Disney World? And he said, yes. Can you tell me? He said, no. But I can tell you that one of them is almost done.
Ooh.
And I went, is it Tron? No. Is it Guardians of the Galaxy? No. But I have no idea to this day what it was. But it's so cool. But he knows so much about all the Disney history. And he's the one who really provided the impetus to the board of starting the Legend of Warren. And he's the one who would come up with them. He'd come up with these obscure people to us, but not to him, but who we needed to honor. And if you ever wanted a wonderful interview him, because he could tell you all about them. And he could tell you stories that he'll remember that I don't. I am known, I hate to admit this, you can include this, but I will admit this. I did registrations most of the time for the club for our conventions. And I was notorious for never going to see a seminar and staying outside reading the newspaper. And people would come out and talk to me if they got bored, or they'd tell me how it was going. And it got to the point that the last 10 years or so, the people who would do the videotaping, because we always had someone, we would have people videotape it. Mm-hmm. They would send me like 2 months later, the DVDs, because they know I never saw a thing.
Yeah.
And I have them, but I have never watched them. So I have all these DVDs of all these conventions that we could watch.
You know, like the Disney archives for Disney Anna conventions.
We actually have all those archives.
That's so cool.
You know what you
That's
should so do cool. is as part of membership,
there you, go.
You should put these online somewhere so when people become members, they can go look at these videos like a back catalog. That would be amazing. You could even have like a different tier of membership that includes that, because obviously that, you know, there's some more effort there, but that would be so cool. Because I tell you, if I could rewatch what we experienced, I feel like I'll catch stuff, because you know, you're in the moment. Bob Gurr was within arm's reach of me, and I asked him a question and he was talking to me, and so I'm sure like half of what he said just fell off my face, because I was like, Bob Gurr is talking directly to me.
Halfway through the event, I thought I should have been taking notes. This is like so interesting. There's just so many things I, you know, had never heard of, or you know, heard stories of, and all that stuff. It was just so cool.
So you guys also at this event, you had an auction, and you had some really cool auction items.
Very cool.
Is there I don't know if you know offhand, but is there more of a story behind that that Main Street window building? We were trying to figure out, because it was so, we talked about it on the podcast, because it was just, it looked like a dollhouse, and when we came in, just looking at it, you'd have no idea what the heck it was.
You know, one of our members, I've been very generous to us, and so one of our members from our Northern California, one of our Northern California chapters, she used to be on the board. She used to be our legacy chair doing auctions for the Ryman Foundation. We would raise money for the Ryman Foundation. Wow. She donated that to us. Yeah, she just said it was something that was in one of the showcases on Main Street. She couldn't remember where, went, what it was exactly. And we just took her at her word and we got rid of it. What did you find that was pretty neat? What did you think was pretty neat of the auction? I'm just curious because I was pleasantly pleased how much we raised on the auctions. And initially I thought...
Teresa wanted to get the Michael Eisner book, but she thought it would sit there for a minute or something, and it was just somebody... Because you had a buy-it-now price, and then it was just gone. We're sitting there in the front row, and Teresa looks over, and the guy has it in her hands, and she's like, dang it! I should have put a bid on that.
What we did was we walked... Because, that's how you shop. You walk through, you kind of look at, see what there is, and then you go back. So we walked through it. As I was going back, somebody had it in their hand, and we're going to check out with it. I'm like...
Was this at the show and sale or on Saturday?
This was on Saturday. So this was on the silent auction items. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we found out that a good thing to do is to bid immediately so that once someone bids, they can't buy it now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh.
So like, for instance, on Sunday, I don't know if you were there Sunday. Were you there Sunday? Mm-hmm. So on Sunday, one of our members from Texas donated all these menus for restaurants that don't exist.
That.
Some
that
of those
was...
And I think we put a price of $350 by now bid. We had two different lots. One lot, someone bought it then. But the second lot, somebody bid on it. So then it went up to $900.
Oh, wow.
You know, I believe it. Because I remember seeing that. And I wanted to, like, just study it because it was so cool. But was I correct? I think I saw things from the Tahitian Terrace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just one of those, like, how do these exist and how are they right here? And it was incredible.
Well, we couldn't believe at the show and sale, one of the first booths that
we got sucked into.
I was laughing because one of our community members went to something recently and she said
she went to Dapper Days.
She went to Dapper Days and she said, I walked into Dapper Days and $300 fell out of my pocket onto the floor.
I don't know what happened.
Yeah, and that's how I felt because I walked up and there was a booth there and they were selling ticket books. And depending on how many tickets were there and the quality or whatever, there was different prices. I wanted a full set of tickets, and I looked at it, and there was one that was in fairly decent shape. It had all the tickets. It was like $170, $165. And I was like, man, And then what happened was we kept walking, and we looked at some other things, and I spent some money on some things. We bought some books. And then I was like, well, now, like, I could probably have spent that amount total, and now I've already bought these books, which ended up being like $70 or $80. So I was like, there's no way I can... not be in trouble when I get home for buying these. But man, I was so surprised with the show and sale, just how much memorabilia and stuff that was authentic that was there. That was so, to me at least, rare.
I mean,
and we had a lot of, we didn't have as many dealers as we usually do. There were quite a few. Apparently one of our members, Patty Setter, was in charge of it. And she was sharing with us that there were a lot of dealers, she said, who didn't want to participate. Because they weren't sure about COVID. They weren't sure they wanted to be in a room with hundreds of people all day long.
Which it makes sense.
Yep.
But you know what? With it being our first show, Lynn had kind of said, it's going to be a little bit smaller, you know, whatever. I think people that knew us, that knew it was our first show, they were like, don't think D23. Just don't. It's not D, you know, they were like, it is not that scale. Don't think that. And so, I came in with like no expectations. I'm like, I don't know what to expect. And I was really impressed. We went through the first main room and all of a sudden we realized that there was a secondary room and I was like, there's more, you know? So yeah.
Teresa completed a couple of her pin collections.
I did.
Yep, oh, fantastic.
But I mean, it was so cool.
She won a door prize.
I did. I won a door prize.
She never wins. We were walking along and they're like, Teresa Urban, and she was like, oh, I never win anything.
What'd you win?
I won, so I am a sucker for the electrical parade, so I enjoyed that the to win, you had to like pick out a button from the tub, and then that button correlated to your prize. So I looked in there, and I saw an electrical parade pin. I'm like, well, that needs to be the one I pick. So I picked that, and it ended up being a tote bag with Steamboat Mickey on it, which ended up being the perfect thing because...
We bought the books.
I bought 2 books. He bought 2 books. So we needed a bag to carry all of our goodies around the rest of the day. So
did you go meet Bobble Chesky?
We saw him.
That booth was swarmed and packed every time we walked past. But when we first were walking in, I was like, look at all these. And all of a sudden I saw the name. I'm like,
well, I told Teresa, I'm like, you know who that is? He's the guy who made like the Main Street models and stuff. And he's sitting there. Carving away, making something.
It was just incredible. There were so many things that I could have just stood there and watched the person.
Yeah, he's been a longtime friend of the club. He's wonderful.
I wish that I would have bought the Main Street stuff when he was making it, because I didn't realize that it wasn't going to be around. Like, a lot of those things are sold out now, and it's so expensive to get them secondhand. And I really, because as a kid, when I would go to Disneyland, I would come home from Disneyland and I would build a little model of Disneyland. And the fact that he had this cool little scale model of Main Street was just amazing. And then I was a little sad because I remember that they said that the Sleeping Beauty Castle would be the most expensive piece, and it ended up not being the most expensive piece because I really wanted the train station, and the train station ended up being more than that. But anyway, I digress.
But I mean, really, walking through the sale, we're collectors, but not to the scale that some people are collectors. We dabble.
Casual collectors.
Yes, there you go. And so it was almost like walking through a museum. The fact that we were looking at this case of all of these ticket books, and every time I see Disneyland ticket books, it blows my mind because I'm wondering, who are these people that bought tickets and did not use all of them? And how have they existed through all of this time? You know, like, it's a piece of paper, and here it is still. It's incredible to me.
And what's really exciting about the ticket books, I don't collect them, but I get excited just looking at them, is that they change from year to year. The backgrounds change. The printing changed. Then they had adult books, and they had junior books, and they had children's. I mean, it's like incredible. And see, I never had any of those as a kid because my father got Magic Key books.
Oh.
The Magic Key books were good on any ride. So when we would stand outside the front of the Disneyland with my mother, and he'd go to a special booth that was for public relations or whatever. I have no idea. Guest relations, I guess, at that time. And he would come back with all these booklets. A ticket, a Magic Key ticket. I still have one that says $3.50. And for the mission, and then all these Magic Keys. So you don't have to worry about having leftover A and B rides.
Right. You had keys to the kingdom.
Pretty cool.
I didn't even know that was a thing. And now I'm looking at it.
Well, you know, now we understand why the APs are called Magic Keys.
I want to say, too, one of the neat things about all of this vintage Disneyland stuff is I feel like they spent so much time and care with the design of these things. Yeah. Like, they're just, because for a little while I did a second podcast, and what we did for the Patreon tiers is we made them A through E tickets. So I looked at all the different tickets real closely, and I tried to mimic that to make the different levels. And just looking at all the cool detail that are in each of these was just amazing. And then being able again to see it in person was so cool.
Like she just mentioned, it changed. It wasn't always the same, you know. So that just the
like level Globe is one company that used to make the tickets, and they'd have little Globe logos on the back of the tickets, like not in the other side, but I mean you'd have the ABCD imprint of Globe.
Yeah, the detail's just incredible.
Yeah, it was pretty.
The other thing that just blew my mind when we were walking through is there was a booth. He was almost dead center in that main room. So he's in between Terry Harden and the guys at the sweep spot. And I just was perplexed.
Rick Law.
Yes. I was just so perplexed. We walked by. I'm like, I'm just very intrigued by
who is this
setup.
Guy?
And
did you look him up?
I did. We spent all sorts of time chatting with him, but I just got sucked in because I'm like, this looks magical. What is this? And so we spent a ton of time talking with him. He He was a very popular booth, so we kind of had to circle back a couple of times. One of the times, he was doing a sketch for a little kid that really wanted it was a Dalmatian, one of the Dalmatians for 101 Dalmatians that he was sketching for him. But that was when we walked by first, and I'm like, he's got, it's like Walt Disney Company paper. He's got a name tag on. I'm like, this guy's got a story, and it's cool. So we stopped and chatted with him. Just phenomenal. Not something I was expecting when I was thinking of going to
sale. You should have
him
as a speaker.
Oh, we got his info. Yep,
we got his info. We're gonna try and connect and find a date. He's so interesting.
I don't know what he's doing right now, but I know during COVID, he was trying to earn money. And one way he did it, he had all this old stationery from Walt Disney Productions. And so say he had 101 Dalmatians stationery, then he would draw a figure from that movie, and then he would sell it. And so that's how he earned extra money. And that's what he was trying to do there. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because we had one of our past legends was where we honored Howard Ashman. Posthumously, we interviewed his sister, who was in charge of his estate, and we had a panel of people who worked with him. One of the people we had was this artist. He did Lumiere.
Oh, yeah.
It'll come to me. His name, and it's funny because he's tall and langly like Lumiere, so he reminds me of Lumiere.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a really delightful speaker, and he came to that. It was a Saturday event. It was a dinner. He was invited to stay for the dinner. He did a presentation with his panel about Howard Ashman and the tales of Howard Ashman. And after he spoke, he said to me, you know, I brought some of my art, and I was wondering if you think I could put a table up. Not for Sunday, but for that Saturday, and sell it and see if anybody would like it. I said, of course. Mm-hmm. So at the end of that day's presentation, before we had the dinner, I set up a table in the lobby. It was actually the same hotel. It was the first time we were at that hotel years ago. And he brought his stuff. I don't think his stuff lasted 45 minutes. People dying went to heaven and seeing what he brought. And I have his email, and I had meant to, but I didn't. I need to invite him for October because he wanted to come to our show and sale. To sell more. And a lot of these guys want to. Like, someone told me that Floyd Norman sold some of his artwork at a pawn shop recently. So I have Floyd's email too. So I'm going to write him and say, you know what, Floyd, we have an audience that will give you more money for it than a pawn shop. And so when we invite these people, like a Rick Law, we comp the table because it behooves us to be able to have a Rick Law. And we're happy that he comes, and they're happy to come. So hopefully we'll see. I'll have to remember this man's name. He was such a nice man. I'll have to look up the artist who did Lumiere.
Well, and that was just what was so special to us, because it was just like a hidden gem within this like treasure trove of other things. I was just like, I was not expecting this at all. So then when we were chatting with him and he was telling us, you know, a brief history of what he used to do with the company and looking through his sketches, immediately Tag and I both money fell out of our pockets again, and we walked away with some of his art because we were just like, these are incredible. I bought actually it's right here, I bought his sketch of Walt's barn.
I'm like, Walt's barn, you know, that's really
come
nice
on what like what a cool thing. And you bought a sketch that he had done of Walt.
Yes.
That was just just incredible.
Yeah, and he was such a nice gentleman to talk to us, and
very very humble.
Like, yeah,
we had to kind of pull the story out of him a little bit because we're like, what are you doing here? We see that you're sketching, and I feel like there's a story. He's like, well, I'm sitting here, I'm sketching, just like it was nothing. And then started chatting more and found out, you know, that he was the artist behind some of these video covers that we, you know, grew up with and had seen everywhere. And I was just like, wow, that's so cool.
So let's get our people excited for October. Maybe we can get some of them there. So I know it's a little ways away and we just got done with the last one, but what are the plans, or are there any plans yet for the October thing? What can people look forward to? When can people buy tickets? That kind of thing. Or do you have any of that information yet?
We don't have that information. We do, because Kim Irvine wasn't able to attend. We are extending an invitation to her for October. So we have some ideas of additional honorees, but we want to go to her first and say, is this date acceptable? And if it isn't, we'll try it for May the next year. Mm-hmm. Just like with Kevin and Jody, they were supposed to come last September and they backed out. We had to cancel our event and push it to May. And they've just been incredibly busy. I don't know if you've seen some of the work they've been doing for Walt Disney World. They did for Paris. They've done incredible stuff. So they're really good friends of ours. They've been to, you talk about exciting. One time they came to our show and sale. We gave them free tables. Mm-hmm. They must have had 10 tables. Huh. And they sold all the artist proofs. I shouldn't say all. It was almost all artist proofs.
Wow.
It was incredible. Their tables were empty at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I bought these two. They're literally, can you see my fingers? You can't. Okay, there's my fingers. They're this big. They're sculptures of the flowers from Alice in Wonderland. And then another one's the same height of Alice. Wow. They're just clay. They're not painted in any way. They're just the original sculptures they use as models for other items.
Dang.
Wow.
That's the kind of stuff they have. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we know, we'll let everyone know and we'll start selling tickets. So we're hoping that by the end of June, we will start selling tickets for this event. And we have some really exciting ideas about what we want to do. The dates are around, I mean, ideally, if we get Kim Irvine, we can do something Halloweenish in Haunted Mansionish because her mother was such an integral part of that.
Oh yeah.
And plus I loved her. Did you see
the Muppets?
Yes. she has a walk-on part in the Muppets. That's so cute, dressed up.
I love that she had to clean Madame Pagoda or whatever.
Yeah, Madame Pagoda's
Madame
ball.
Pagoda's.
They named it after her because her mom's name was Leota Toombs.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that weird that her last name was Tomb?
Yeah, it was meant to be.
It was meant to be. And they just loved her voice and her face. Mm-hmm. And that's why they asked her to be the mom. I mean, she did lots of other stuff. Because we see her face, so that's what we all remember her for. Not knowing that she was one of the first Imagineers in the 60s, women Imagineers.
Yeah. It's incredible.
What a legacy of that family.
What a rich Disney family history.
Oh, yeah. Did you see the People magazine article about her mother, herself, and her daughter as an Imagineer?
Oh,
I did not.
Yeah, look it up.
We'll have to
People magazine. Yeah, it's easily accessed. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool. And there's a picture of her daughter.
Three generations.
That's really exciting.
That's incredible. Really incredible. With Disney Anna, so the term Disney Anna, I think a lot of people, especially Disneyland fans, probably associate it with the shop in, on Town Square there. So since most people associate the term Disney Anna with collecting, I want to chat with you about collecting a little bit. You said that you dabble in collecting yourself. So what are some things that you collect?
Well, I collected buttons for many, many years, and then they got too expensive, and there was too many, and so I stopped. And then I collect Alice in Wonderland, because that's one of my favorite movies. And I did collect some Alice in Wonderland, and then I started getting into pins late. I mean, I didn't start collecting until about 2010, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I used to collect only things that had a date on it. It had to have a date. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did for many years. And then that got too, way too much. So then I just did Alice in Wonderland. And now I don't have to have everything. Of course, can't have everything. Can't possibly have everything. I mean, but I collect a little bit of that. And then I try to be quite honest, my wife doesn't love Disney, so she doesn't want our house to be cluttered.
And we understand.
So I have to think very thoughtfully about what I bring into the house and where is it going to go that's not going to irritate her. So I then spent the last 10 years really trying to buy things that were functional in nature. So I love to bake and cook. So I have a lot of stuff that's Disney that's in my kitchen. And so that kind of, you know, works.
I like clothes, a lot of clothes. There you go. I like your thought process with collecting because, yeah, you start going down one path and you're like, this is a pretty narrow path. I can stick to it. And then all of a sudden it's like, I don't know, a 10-lane freeway. You're like, nope, that was not narrow enough a path. Because once you get in there, there's just so much cool stuff.
Poor Teresa. I feel like she got into ears. And then all of a sudden, they released so many ears, and she's like, I just don't know. And then, of course, it's so funny. Teresa's told this story on the podcast a bunch of times, too, is she wants a good pair of ears. So sometimes you go in, and like kids and everything have like touched them, and the bows are funny. So we spent, oh gosh, a ton of time looking for this one set of ears, but the bows were all off or whatever. So she ended up buying one at World of Disney, and then we happened to be walking by the newsstand on the way like to the hotel, and Teresa's like, well, let me just look over here. And she found one that was even better. And she's like, can I exchange this one for that one?
Of course.
The cast member was so kind. I was like, yes. I'm like,
do you have Kim Irvine's ears?
I don't have her ears.
Her ears are really cool.
They are very cool. Suddenly, I had them hanging on my bedroom wall, and now I don't have a wall anymore because it's just all ears. And we've built a separate little shelf, and I'm just like, okay. Narrowing that path down again. But yeah.
How do you not have these?
Her ears are amazing.
How do you not have these?
I don't know why I don't have them yet.
What are you looking at?
At Kim Irvine's ears. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't remember what they look like.
Refresh my memory. What do they look like? My friend Linda, who was the president before me of the club, she loves ears. Mm-hmm. And for her birthday in 2019, she's born in December, I bought her those ears.
Did you?
And she was so excited. She was going to wear them at the dinner. When we honored Kim, she was like all bummed out. Because they're very fancy and they come in this really nice box. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't wear them just anywhere or anytime.
Yeah. That's how I feel. I was so surprised, and that's how I felt about the they had the set of ears that had Walt in black and white on them. It was like $50 or something, and it had the display case and everything, and I was like, how is this just $50? And then there are the other designer ones that are just the ears, and they were like $300, and I'm like, I don't understand how this is working.
I will give you a little anecdote about our name. We were the National Fantasy Fan Club because in 1985, Disney Company would not allow us to use the term Disney.
Sure, sure.
And in... at the beginning of the origins of D23, we met with Marty Sklar and we met with people who are creating D23. And they shared with us a lot of what they had in mind. Mm-hmm. And they asked us about stuff we were planning to do. That time, Marty Sklar basically said to us, you know, you could use the word Disneyana. It's not a problem anymore. So when they gave us permission, that's when we switched. Because NFFC was like, what's NFFC? And then when you spell it out and say it's the National Fantasy Fan Club, then your mind doesn't necessarily go to Disney per se.
No, I would have thought that it was like Dungeons and Dragons or something. Exactly. Or
yeah, and so that's why we switched to Disney and a Fan Club, is that we felt that was more of who we were. And yeah, so that's why we switched midstream there.
Well, and your logo, I mean, it's just so simple, but I just love the look of the D. It's just, it gives me like WED vibes. I'm mm-hmm. sure that was probably intentional.
Yeah, one of our members designed that.
Yeah, I just love it. It gives me old school WED vibes. Yeah. It's great.
So one of the things you talked about at the event was how Disneyana is funded and like where you get the money to continue on with your mission. So if somebody is listening to this and they want to help support the Disneyana Fan Club, what are ways that people could do that?
Well, first off, you could join your organization. You could attend our event. We in the past have sold sponsorships to our events. Oh, where you can buy a sponsorship and there's things you can get into as a benefit of having sponsorship, or you can make donations. And one of what our members have done for us is donate those members. So most of the things that you saw at our auctions were all donated by our members. Yeah. And that is what sustained us in the last 10 years, because we cannot make it by our memberships alone. Basically, that weekend event was usually, it happened that the show and sale helps pay for the whole weekend event. It wasn't always enough, and so we had to have these auctions. So that was, I don't think anyone has done that before, be so open about our finances, but I wanted people to realize, I mean, like, when we have a show and sale, before we came to the DoubleTree, that show and sale alone cost us $10,000.
Oh, wow.
To rent the room for one day.
Yeah.
And then it was another $12,000 to do the luncheon or the dinner and have the room. So, you know, the whole event cost us, this time cost us $18,000. That was our cost. And there's not a lot of organizations. And we have a lot of mostly social organizations that compete with us that put on things, but they can't do what we do because they're not interested, or that's not what the members want. But this is our little niche that we have. And so we really appreciate what people bid on and what they support us when they bid on stuff, because, like, for instance, we have a budget every year, and every other year when we want to make sure we continue having a presence at D23. We just think it's important. Mm-hmm. I was a longtime person who said, no, it is not worth it. It's a lot of work. There's a lot of thousands of people. We don't get the memberships from it. What's the point? And everyone would overrule me and say, no, we need, even if we don't get the memberships, we need to be a presence. The people need to know about us. And so it costs us now $3,000 to have a presence at D23.
Wow.
That's what it costs us. And they went to a different, I don't know if you've tried to get a booth there, but they went to a different process this time. Now they invited people.
Oh.
Okay, so they had a list of, so you've been there before, so you know the area I'm talking about where people sold things. And my chat would be there, and other people would be, the Laughing Place had a table and stuff like that. They look at that list, and this year they only invited people to have a table, only a few were invited to have the privilege of buying a table. And we were one of them. So they made it smaller. It's supposed to be in a better area. We're not in the back corner. We're supposed to be closer to the center. I have no idea if this is what's going to really happen.
Sure.
But that's what they've told us. But $3,000 is a significant amount of money for us.
Yeah.
Because it's not just $3,000. It's $3,000 for the 3 days of the booth. But that doesn't count what we have to pay. It's a union place. So we have to pay for a union person to set up the booth for us. We can only have one person go in. Well, one person can't do it by himself. So we have to hire a union person. We have to get electricity. So all that is extra, extra, extra. Wow. So our finance person basically said to us when the prices started going up about 6 years ago, hey, we have to raise money. We don't have that money. So that's when we started doing the auction. That has paid for, we're good. We're paid, we paid for D23. We're good.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Well, yeah.
You know, I think it's really cool because the things that were up for auction were just all over the board and just so unique in their own special way. And it was so fun watching Terry do the, be like the auctioneer for
the
dinner. Yeah. She's incredible. And just watching how her reaction to when she was auctioning off her original painting of the Paris Castle was just, I mean, that in and of itself was priceless. And I'm sure, you know, the lucky person that won it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was probably a memory that they'll cherish forever. Cause when else can you go to an auction and be bidding and like having, you know, with the person that
did
the piece, you know, that's just incredible. What
it was very special for her to do that and to have it go for such a high amount. The piece she did is funny. Rick Law is actually the one who inspired us to have that piece, because when the last time we honored someone with the Legend Award was in February of 2020, months before COVID.
Oh, wow.
And we honored Margaret Carey.
Yes.
Who's Tinkerbell, right?
Yeah.
And he's a very good friend of Margaret Carey. So he said, you know what? I would really like to do a gift in honor of Margaret Carey. And so he did this piece of artwork that we put on, you know, how you could do it where you could put it wraps around.
Like a lantern?
No. So it was a piece of artwork that wraps around like a canvas. Yeah. So you can do that. So it was really beautiful with Tinkerbell, and she signed each one individually. So everyone who attended got that. Wow. And then we got the original artwork and we auctioned it off. So when we came to this one, I just posed it to her. I said, you know, we were wondering if you might want to do a piece of artwork like Rick did for Margaret Carey. And she said, yeah, I'd be happy to do that. I think I have time. And I said, and I didn't ask her what to do. I just said, do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And when I went to her house to pick it up, because we had to make copies of it, she showed me that it came in black and white and it came in color. But the original is in the watercolor. Mm-hmm. And I was floored. To be quite honest, because I don't know, I've never been to France either. So I didn't know this attraction. And I was like, what is it I'm looking at? I know it's a castle. Mm-hmm. Why is she so excited? Then I realized, oh my God, there's the dragon there.
Yeah.
Did you like the gift?
Oh yeah. Right.
She's got it right there.
It was amazing. And then the fact that then we could go walk and talk with Terry, because she was very, very popular that evening and she got her award, of course. So we went and chatted with her the next day and then she very graciously signed them for us. So now I just have to find a special frame so I can, because I'm like you, I can't decide which one I like better. They're both just so beautiful.
Yeah, I'm
going to
frame them together side by side.
They're just beautiful.
When she gave it to me, she said, I'm going to email it to Darren is the man who does all our designs. He does the centerpieces. He puts together the artwork, and I'm going to send Darren both of them, and he could decide. It's Darren's choice. He can do whatever he wants. So when I picked it up from him, he reproduced it. I went to go pick it up, and I said, so what'd you decide? He said, I couldn't decide. I like them both. So everyone's getting both. I said, that's awesome. A great decision.
Yeah. I mean, it was just incredible. I was not expecting, we weren't expecting that at all. So the fact that we came to the table and we have these little, you know, white envelopes and then the pins. And I was over the moon that I have a Disney and a fan club pin now. I was just like, that was totally unexpected and such a nice, nice gift and a nice surprise. So
I'm glad you liked it. That's why I asked, because I was just curious if you enjoyed it.
And
gift.
I have to
that
say,
that is going
to
be like an item I'm hanging on to forever. I mean, it's gorgeous and amazing in and of itself, but then, you know, the whole backstory of
the whole
why
story.
I have the piece, you know, it's just
and you talk
just
to the
incredible.
Artist and he signed it for you there.
Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Only at see, you can't have this experience other places. That's what makes Disneyana so special.
And I will say it's not Disneyana necessarily related. It's not Disney related, but I do want to put it out there that the food was very good as well, by the way.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, I thought the food was really good. So, yeah, because you get a dinner. If you do the thing, you can buy the tickets. You get the dinner. You get the presentations. You get everything. It was great. I'm looking forward to whatever our next Disneyana event will be because it's a little harder for us to get out there, but we wanted to.
We want to make it happen.
I will make sure I email you once we have ready to announce it, so you could announce it to your fans. And like I said, our goal is to have it all finalized by the end of this month. We're
in
the process right now to
talk about it,
contacting the people who we want as legends, and we have a theme we have, and it's just making sure we can line them all up. But it should be a lot.
Well, if it's anything like the one we just went to, it's going to be fantastic.
It's as good as the one we just went to. It was.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're coming from a distance, so I'm really happy that you're able to attend and experience it. Because I feel like if people come and experience this, we have them. Because the intimacy of our events is really exciting. And it's very unique. And, I mean, the last time I could think of that I could get easily a signature from someone at D23 was in 2011. I can't remember when the first one was. Was the first one the 9th, 2009,
I think?
So. Yeah,
I think
so. In 2011, they did Stacia Martin. You know who she is? Stacia Martin, back in the day, used to be a cast member at Disneyland, and she worked for Disney Gallery that was above Pirates of the Caribbean. This is before they did the apartment. Very knowledgeable woman. But she didn't just do that. She, you know how they would send a group of characters and artists, and they would send them to malls across the country, and they would promote Disneyland and Disney World.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She'd be one of the artists they would send. She's a really learned person in terms of Disney history, Disney music. She's an artist herself, does wonderful sketches. She often is invited on Disney cruises to speak and do artwork. She did this wonderful piece of art that I have in my bathroom. The reason it's in my bathroom is because I have a Mickey Mouse bathroom.
There you go.
And with Mickey Mouse sink and everything. And on it is Mickey. It's like Mickey likes, like with his hands out. And right in front of it is Donald Duck. Like Donald Duck has
photobombing him.
Photobombing him. And it's the cutest thing. And I just love that. She was there signing it. And if you renewed your D23 membership that weekend, you got a print of this.
Oh.
Free. Mm-hmm. And then she would sign it for you. And that's the last time I remember ever trying to get someone's signature at D23. Because I go every year and I actually buy tickets. When we buy a booth, they give us like 6 tickets.
Sure, yeah.
But you can't do anything with it because you get to enter, but you're not allowed to go to around your neck. So I always buy a ticket. So if I want to go someplace, I can. But you really can't do that now. I mean, I don't know if the last couple of years they had artists who gave autographs. I think they may have had limited signings. But
is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you would like to go over before we wrap up? Because I want to be respectful of your time, and we've been going for almost 2 hours now. Because right when we get talking Disney, it's just, fun.
I know. I agree. Yeah. I agree. It is fun. I urge them to check us out. You know, you can check us out on our website. We're trying to make that a little more, you know, check out our chapters. We have them all over the country. Our Illinois chapter is very active. Our Wisconsin one is. Our Florida chapter is. Our Cascade chapter in Oregon. Our Mountaineers chapter in Washington, I think. And then we have about 4 in California that are very active. And then some of them been around for like 25 years. Like the one in Illinois about 4 years ago, I went with our then president, Linda, and we went to help them celebrate their 25th anniversary. And that was really exciting. So yeah, check us out. And I mean, our Florida chapter is having a fantastic event this next Saturday. Mm-hmm. They're having a speaker, an author. I'm sorry, I can't remember. But if you go to their website, you can find that. And in October, one of our members is a professional musician who lives in Vegas and works and performs with a lot of Vegas talent. He created a new version of Peter Pan play. And Margaret Carey was very involved with him in it. They performed it in December of 2019 in Las Vegas. It's a kids production. Mm-hmm. It's intended to be used for kids. And we, about 5 of us from LA area went to Vegas to see it. And it was so delightful. And he's revised it. He's added more music. And he's performing it as a fundraiser for Give Kids the World, which the chapter in Florida is sponsoring. And you'll get to see the play. You get to support a great organization. And his name is James Presley. You talk about somebody you want to get. This guy is so talented. He does some great stuff, and he's putting this all together. And Margaret Carey is going to be there. James Presley is going to be there. And I can't remember. There's some third person I feel bad I forget. But if you go to our website, you'll find it. But you can also find it on their website. And in North Carolina, we have North Carolina is doing a big pin show September 3rd in North Carolina. You know the triangle? Durham, Raleigh, something? They're doing a big pin show. It's going to be the second one. That's our chapter in North Carolina. So it's a lot of good stuff that is local. You don't have to come to LA for it. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I highly recommend you come out and do
that. Yeah, no, right. We want you to come. I'm not trying to dissuade you at all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, man. But it's cool that there's also these local chapters. So it's not just, you know, so you can.
Right.
Do Disneyana things from home, too. So it's exactly. Very, very cool.
We have reached the end, and we have our last question, and I'm really interested to see what your answer is to this one. If you could work at Disneyland, what would you do? So the sky's the limit. Could be a real job. Could be a made-up job. What would you do?
I've never heard them to be a particularly good employer. But I'm not sure I'd want to work for Disney. But it's going to be the way I want it to be. Mm-hmm. I would love to be a ride operator, you know, like for Casey Jr. And then I get to ride the train. Wouldn't that be cool? I get to open the cages, let the people in. I get to lock them in. And I get to go to the front. Choo-choo. And
how slow or fast you're going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd make sure my shift's rolling for the fast train.
She just got it.
That's awesome.
We're not slowing down anybody.
We're going for it.
That would be fun. Because, you know, storybook I wouldn't want to do. Even though I love storybook, mm-hmm. I don't want to have to say that spiel all the
time. Yeah.
But in Casey Jr., it's all good.
You just get to sit in the front. You get however long the attraction is without guests. You just got to deal with them when you let them in and out. And then, exactly. You know, it's a good mix.
Yeah. Plus, the
view from that front car is probably super cool, too, because it's just, you know, just open.
Yeah.
I love it.
And then you'll end up hating it because you'll be like, oh, here we go. Another loop around Casey Jr. It's like the Jungle Cruise skippers who say, I get to go on it every 8 minutes or whatever.
So. Right.
Well, thank you so much, Nicolasa, for taking the time to chat with us and to tell us more about Disneyana. We strongly urge all of our listeners to check it out because we had just such a wonderful and just, I mean, truly magical time at your most recent event in May. So thank you so much for all you do.
Listeners, if you could block out time in October.
October, yes.
Could be amazing. It sounds like maybe Will Kim Irvine. Amazing. Let's just...
Two birds with one stone. You could sign up for the Halloween party.
Yes,
and attend our event as well.
Exactly.
And if you can't make that one happen, next May, right? Okay. May and October.
Exactly.
So
thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun to talk to you both. And I look forward to communicating with you more about our upcoming events and keeping you in the loop of the latest information.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. And then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, DL Weekly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land. How do you feel?
Not great.
No?
Not great.
No? You look so forlorn.
Oh, they're tough.
Even people in our live stream Discord chat are saying that they were hard tonight. So it's not just us.
Well, let's find out how you did, shall we?
Sure.
Okay. Your first one from listener Will R. Walt Disney wasn't the only one who had an apartment in Disneyland. Who was the other person and where was the apartment located? You said Dick Nunes and Adventureland. The correct answer that I was looking for was Wally Bogue, and it was above Aunt Jemima's, now known as Riverbell Terrace.
Wow.
Really?
Good job, Wally Bogue.
Dang. Wow. I'm going to have to look this up and read more. Wow.
There's actually a very nice article about it if you just Google Wally Bogue apartment Disneyland.
Wow.
Wow.
Learn something new.
That's amazing.
Your second regular round question from listener Omar S. In the partner statue, Walt is wearing a tie. On that tie is a lapel pin. What is the symbol on the lapel pin and what is its origin? You said the ranch in Palm Springs. The correct answer I was looking for was the logo of the Smoke Tree Ranch, the ranch in Palm Springs, California, where Walt would take his family to go recharge.
Hey, that's a half a point, I think.
So for that, I awarded a half point credit, yes.
I was thinking three circles. I was thinking three trees, but that didn't sound right. So Smoke Tree. Good job, Teresa.
Your third regular round question submitted by listener Chris Y. In Casa Della Tires, you can see a poster for the Radiator Springs annual Carburetor County Classic Film Festival. What movies are being shown at the festival? Your answers were nothing. The correct answers that I was looking for. I would have given half credit if you got 4 to 6, and I would have given full credit if you got 9 or more. Mary Poppin' a Wheelie.
Oh.
Oh, my gosh.
The Three Cabs. Peter Oil Pan.
Yeah, I don't...
Lady and the Ramp. The Love Bug, The Aristocars, The Reluctant Drag Strip, Truck Beds and Stick Shifts, Toy Car Story, The Dead Battery Society, The Hatchback of Notre Dame, Monster Trucks Incorporated.
I really like The Hatchback of Notre Dame.
I thought that, what was it? The Bed Knobs and Broomsticks spin.
Truck Beds and Stick Shifts?
Yes, Truck Beds and Stick Shifts. That's clever. Dang, yeah, I couldn't have made those up.
Nope.
Especially not Mary popping a wheelie. I would not have made, like, just come up with that out of thin air.
Hatchback of Notre Dame, ma'am. Love it.
Cars Land is just epic this way, because there's so many fun layers in things that, yeah, you don't even notice.
You know what I feel like I should say real quick before we move on? I did see that Cars Land turned 12 today. 12. 10 today. Or soon.
Oh, happy birthday, Cars Land.
Today is the monorail and the subs and the Matterhorn's birthday today. Yep. Today, as in we're recording this on the 14th.
June 15th. So the day that this publishes is the 10th anniversary of Cars Land.
And your fourth and final regular round question, inspired by Donna S. I have acquired a list of 6 train routes that Disneyland has seen. Put them in order from longest to shortest. People Mover, Monorail, Viewliner, Casey Jr., Big Thunder Railroad, and the Disneyland Railroad. The answer that you gave, Monorail, Disneyland Railroad, People Mover, Big Thunder Railroad, Viewliner, and Casey Jr. The correct answer that I was looking for, at 2.3 miles, the Monorail, at 1.2 miles, Disneyland Railroad, at 1 mile, the People Mover.
Oh.
At 3/4 of 1 mile, the Viewliner. Half a mile, Big Thunder Railroad. And 1/3 of a mile, Casey Jr.
Hey, we didn't do too shabby.
You
here.
Flipped Viewliner and Big Thunder Railroad.
We had 4 out of 6.
I gave you full credit.
Considering none
very
of us
well
experienced
done.
The Viewliner, I'm pretty proud of us.
Yeah. Wow, we did a lot better than I thought we were going to do on that one.
And your bonus question tonight from listener Lisa K. Who voices Jose in the Tiki Room? Both of you knowing it immediately, that was Mr. Wally Bogue.
In fairness, I did not remember, but Teresa said it and I remembered that we had talked about it a couple weeks ago, so...
I was being nice.
Thank you. I just wanted to be upfront that that was all Teresa.
Well done, Teresa. And way to play a long tag.
Thank you.
Way to play a long tag.
Well, listeners, how do you feel about how they did? How did you do listening at home? Do you think you've got some great questions that can really stump them next week? Or do you think we were too mean to them and I should go back to the easy questions
yes,
from the Disneyland Parks app?
Yes, please.
Either way, we welcome your suggestions and your questions at trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us. And we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.